Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamini Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarini Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Govardhan Puja ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Giridhari ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai. So this Govardhan Puja festival is described in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in 4 chapters. Chapter 24, 25, 26, and 27. So I will give you a summary of each chapter. There is extensive information in these chapters and extensive purport given by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and also includes purports by the great acharyas such as Sridhar Swami, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami. So I will cover each one of them as extensively as the time allows. So it happened that Krishna was 7 years old and Balaram is 1 year older than Krishna. And they were playing where it's described by Sridhar Swami, and also it's described in the verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam that Bhagavam Apita Traiva. Prabhupada explains this also in a Govardhan Puja class in 1966 on 22nd Avenue. This Bhagavam Apita Traiva. The Traiva means the place where they were playing is the same place where the wives of the Brahmanas satisfied Krishna. Remember that past time that Krishna went to the Brahmanas asking for certain things. The Brahmanas were too busy doing their ceremonies, they didn't want, but then they went to the wives, and the wives, they pleased Krishna. So it's in that same place, Krishna and Balaram, they were watching a lot of activity going on. It's like when we have a festival here, we have a Jamastami festival, Govardhan Puja festival, there's a lot of activity, as it was described. Garlands, flowers, ghee, ceremonies, chanting. So they observed that there's a lot of activity going on. And Krishna became curious, although he is the Supreme Personality of God and he knows everything. Still, he went to his father and he questioned his father, what is happening in this place? Now, what are you preparing? What kind of ceremony is this? Is this some scriptural injunction or is just a popular ceremony? Who is going to benefit from this ceremony? And what is going to be the result of this ceremony? Krishna was very inquisitive. Now, many times the young kids, the Shri Radha Shamasandhi. Many times the young kids, they're very inquisitive. They start asking all kinds of things. And Krishna was only 7 years old. So he was asking all these questions. And Srila Jiva Goswami explains that upon hearing all these questions from Krishna, Nanda Maharaj, he became silent, doubting his position as a parent, and wondering, how this boy is asking so many questions like this. And Krishna also told him that we should not be blind followers of tradition. So if we are doing something, if we are doing a ceremony, we should understand why we're doing the ceremony, and the ceremony should have some tangible benefit. Prabhupada explains this also in 1966 in his class, that whatever we do in Krishna consciousness has to have some tangible benefit. And Prabhupada was a man of results-driven person. Yeah? He always wanted to know, what is the result? When Tamal Krishna approached Prabhupada in India and said, Prabhupada, I no longer want to stay in India. I want to go back to America. And Prabhupada questioned him, why do you want to go to America? Oh, because I want to go to preach. And Prabhupada said, preaching means results. Preaching means how many books, how many devotees. And Tamal Krishna said, Prabhupada, I'm going to distribute books. I'm going to make 20 new bhaktas by the time you come back to America. And he did, actually. At the last moment, the last bhakta was being shaved and coming to on the line to offer obeisance to Prabhupada. So preaching means result. And anything we do has to have some kind of result. So Krishna is also results-oriented. He was asking his father, so what is the result? If we're going to do this, what is the benefit? No. And then, Nanda Maharaj started explaining to Krishna, what is happening here? What is this ceremony about? He explained that the ceremony is for Lord Indra, because Lord Indra, he is the controller of the clouds. And the rain-giving clouds, they supply water. And with water, the vegetables grow, the fruits grow, the grains grow. And then the cows can be fed. We can get milk, we can get ghee, all by the blessings of Lord Indra. All the three aspects of life, religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification can be achieved just by rain. And if there is no rain, we cannot have any vegetables growing. You know, it's difficult to underestimate the benefit of the water. If there is no water, we cannot do anything. No. We cannot even be a religious person, because religious person means clean. So he started explaining to Krishna, and he also said that this religious principle that we are following is based on sound tradition. Sound tradition means that something that's established. Now we don't know how long, it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, how long this festival, Indra Puja, called Indra Puja, was going on. But apparently it was going on for a long time because it was based on sound tradition. And for a kid to come and tell his father and the elders that I want to change the sound tradition, it's very difficult. Like suppose that we go to the city of Alatra, one of our kids, 7 years old, and tell them, we want to change your Christmas celebrations here in Alatra. This is my plan, I want to do something different. They maybe accept that politely, but they would decline. They say, no, we cannot do that. Even Halloween, if we go to change Halloween, they would not change. Nobody would change. So the fact that Krishna approached Nanda Maharaj was very audacious on his part, that I want to change this tradition. So he was questioning Nanda Maharaj, and then he started explaining why we should not do that. He gave arguments from the philosophy of Karmavada or Karma Mimamsa, that it's basically materialism, but believes in reincarnation. He started telling Nanda Maharaj and the elders that whatever we do, there is some reaction. If we do good, we receive something good in result, in return. And if we do something bad, we receive something bad in return. And the demigods, they can only award good or bad to us if we do these activities. So if we don't do the activities, they don't have the power to award us good or bad. So in summary, these demigods, they are also involved in karma, as it's explained in the Brahma Samhita, that Yastrin Dragopam Atravenda Mahotsa Karma, that from Indra to Indra Gopam, the germ Indra Gopam, they are all involved in karma. Whatever action they do, they receive a reaction. So if we don't do actions, what is the power that Indra has to change our karma? He cannot change our karma. And Prabhupada explains in one class, that's like if you go to Com Edison, he was referring to Com Edison in New York City, that provides water and electricity, and pay your bill, they give you electricity. And if you don't pay your bill, they don't give you electricity, but they don't have the power of giving or not giving. No. If you pay, they cannot say, we don't give you electricity. And if you don't pay your bill and you go there and offer a garland to them and food and grains, still they won't give you electricity. So Krishna was giving the argument to Nanda Maharaj that you're doing all the sacrifice for Indra, but he has to do anyway. That's his job. Because you do your activities and he has to provide that. So there's no use to offer any sacrifice to Indra, since this is our activity that is giving that in return. And Krishna also explained to Nanda Maharaj that Govardhan Hill, that is providing us all the grass for the cows, and the Brahmanas that are providing all the sacrifice, and the forest that is providing the fruits, they are the ones that should be worshipped. And not a far distant place, Indra, that is far away. No, these are the ones that should be worshipped. So my proposal to you, my father, it was a much more extensive description from Krishna. My proposal is that instead of worshipping Indra in the ceremony, we completely change the tradition and we actually offer everything that was prepared, all the fruits, vegetables, grains, ceremonies, that we offer everything to Govardhan Hill and also to the Brahmanas and the cows. At that moment, naturally, there was a pause. And Jiva Goswami explains that Krishna not only wanted to give a lesson to Indra, making him understand that he is just a tiny demigod and he should not be so proud of his power, but also he wanted to show the inhabitants of Vrindavan that I am here, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What are you doing worshipping the demigods? I am here, I am the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, matak sarvam pravartate iti, patva bhajante mam buddha bhava samambita. Everything comes from me. And now you were doing all the sacrifice to a demigod, an insignificant demigod, just to get some rain. So Krishna wanted to make 2 points, Jiva Goswami explains. And also, Krishna was a little angry. He had transcendental anger that they could not understand that I can supply everything for you and you were going to a demigod. So since Lord Indra cannot change anybody's karma, Krishna was saying, why worship him and why do so much for him? So then Krishna also mentioned that the duty of the Vaishyas is divided in four. And Prabhupada mentions this verse many times in his classes, which is Krishi Vanijya Goraksha Kushidam Turyamuchate Varta Chatur Vidhata Tra Vayam Go Vritayonisham. The four things that the Vaishyas do. One is farming. Another one is commerce. Another one is cow protection. And another one is banking, four activities. As far as farming and cow protection, years ago, there was an article on the front page of the New York Times, Sunday edition, some agricultural economists, they were analyzing the economy of the United States, it was going down, and they came to the conclusion that the solution to all economic problems would be to go back to small farms. If you go back to small farms, everybody would do well. Now, there is a big difference between the wealthy and the poor. In a recent study from Harvard, a professor from Harvard University, he shows that 1% of the population of the United States has 40% of the wealth. No, the population of the United States is 318 million. So 318,000 people have 40% of the wealth of the country. But when you have farm communities, small farm communities, it's easier to make the playing field level. And more recently, again in the New York Times, there was an article I read this week actually about farming also, that a gentleman who was the manager at Microsoft. He left Microsoft. He invested $2 million in a small farm. And he also came to the same conclusion. If we have small farms, we could completely change the economy and raise the quality of life of the individuals. It's exactly what we have heard from Prabhupada so many times. So Lord Krishna then proposed to Nanda Maharaj and the elders, let's worship Govardhan here instead. And one would think that an argument like this, the elders would say, well, let's discuss, let's get everybody together and see what everybody's opinion is. But no, the Bhagavatam has no description on that. They simply accepted. They immediately accepted Krishna's choice of worship and started preparing according to his indication. Krishna said, let's cook many delicious preparations, starting with, do you know? Sweet rice. Starting with sweet rice. I don't know why he said sweet rice first, but it's starting with sweet rice. And ending with? Does anybody know? Ending with vegetable soups. Starting with sweet rice and ending with vegetable soups. And also making baked cakes and fried cakes and bring all the milk products and bring all the flowers and ceremonies, and the Brahmana should start chanting Vedic hymns. Krishna gave all the orientation on how the sacrifice should be performed. And we should worship the cows. He also said that nobody should go hungry. Even the dog eaters and the dogs, everybody should eat. Everybody should have food. And Prabhupada explains in one of his classes that although cats and dogs should never be neglected, cows have a special position in the Vedic culture. It's obvious because the cows, they provide milk, they provide ghee, and everything about the cow is useful. But all the other animals should not be neglected. And Krishna, in this past time, he tells Nanda Maharaj and the Brahmanas, everybody should be fed. All the animals, all the Brahmanas, all the dog eaters, everybody should be fed. Prabhupada gave that example also, that 10 miles from a temple, nobody should go hungry. So then after everybody eats to their satisfaction, you should dress and decorate yourselves handsomely. So Krishna wanted that everybody dress nicely, handsomely, and decorate themselves handsomely. No, devotees should be presentable. One time there was a Mataji that wrote to Prabhupada, and she said that I am dressed very simply now. You know, I have a white sari, I don't have any decoration, I don't have makeup, nothing. And Prabhupada wrote back to her and said, you should dress nicely because Krishna does not like ugly gopis. So then Krishna ends with this saying that this is my ideal, Father, and you may carry it out if it appeals to you. Such a sacrifice will be very dear to the cows, the Brahmanas, and Govardhana Hill, and also to me. And then they accepted. No. Then Krishna assumed an unprecedented form, a huge form, as Govardhana Hill, and he started eating all the offerings. And at the same time, he remained as Krishna, the seven-year-old child, and he told his father, Father, just see how this Govardhana assumed this huge form. And then everybody offered obeisances to Govardhana, and Krishna offered obeisances to Govardhana also, as himself. And then they made all the offerings. And together the people of Raja performed the ceremony. And thus end the first of the four chapters, the 24th chapter. However, at the end, Sridhar Swami gives a summary of the six theoretical arguments that Krishna presented in this chapter. Does anybody know those six theoretical arguments? Go ahead, Prabhu. That was the third. The second is that one's conditional nature is the supreme controller. Then the third is and the fourth? That's okay. The fourth is that the Supreme Lord is dependent on karma. It means if you don't do the activity, the Supreme Lord can't give the result. And then the fifth, that he is under the control, the Lord itself, because he is dependent on your activity, he's also under the control of karma. And the sixth, that one's occupation is the actual worshipable deity. And that's what most karmis think, you know, that are not religious. They think, you don't have to go to church. You go to church every Sunday and you have nothing. You cannot even buy a new car. I don't go to church, I just work hard. I have the latest car. I have a nice house. You just work hard and everything will be done. Now that's materialistic philosophy, you know. Then, of course, until then, Indra was not focused on what was happening there. Now, he was probably watching his cosmic news or something else. But then the headlines just popped up that they actually accepted his suggestion. And Indra said, what? You know? Right? And now, until then, he was thinking, he's just talking. And who is going to listen to a child, 70-year-old, trying to change a tradition? Nobody's going to listen. Yeah? Just child talk. But when they said yes, then immediately rang the bell, and Indra said, this is not right, this is serious. Something is going wrong in my plans. Yeah. Then, on verse number 3 and verse number 5 of the 25th chapter, Indra refers to Krishna as Krishna Martyam. He repeats this twice, on the third verse and on the fifth verse, which means, this Krishna is just a human boy, Martya, Martya Loka, this earth. He's just an inhabitant of this earth. But he is so foolish, arrogant, and talkative. That's what Indra says, the qualities of Krishna. He is foolish, he's arrogant, and he's talkative. And he is making all these people my enemies, because now they don't want to worship me. They want to worship the zeal and follow his instructions. Immediately, he called for his clouds. The clouds that come at the time of destruction. Samvartaka. And the clouds came. They were hesitant, actually, to do this. But he forced them. You have to go and destroy the animals and destroy Vrindavan. So the clouds departed. And Indra, with his elephant, Airavata, which is mentioned on the Bhagavad Gita, no, it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, verse 27, where it's described the opulence of the Absolute, that among the horses I am Uchashrava, and of the elephants I am Airavata. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that these two animals, because Krishna says that he is these animals, no, they should be seen respectfully. And we should remember Krishna when we see them. So Indra comes with his elephant Airavata, following the clouds, and it's described in the Bhagavatam that some of the drop of waters falling were the size of columns. And it was also hell. I don't know, here in the U.S. I've never seen hell, but when I grew up in Sao Paulo, there was no snow, but there was a lot of hell. And I remember because we had a ceramic tile roof, and when there was hell falling, I would hear, and I would run outside to eat the ice, because it was nice. But here, I've never seen that. So there was also hail falling, a lot of rain, and also there was a lot of wind. It's described by one of the acharyas that this wind was not a common wind. It was also the wind that comes at the time of destruction. So immediately there was a flood in Vrindavan, and with that flood, everybody started panicking. You know? It says that you could not see what was low ground and high ground. There was flood everywhere. So the brahmanas and the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they came to Krishna and said, Govinda Sharanam Jaju, Krishna, you are our shelter. And the cows also came to Krishna. And all the animals, everybody came to Krishna. They had no other shelter. They said, only Krishna can help us. And immediately, Krishna, seeing the situation, he decided to take action. They remembered, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they remembered that they heard that during the secret ceremony of Krishna's birth ceremony, Gargamuni had predicted that this child will protect you from all danger. It was predicted. So they remembered, then they thought, let's go to Krishna for protection. And Krishna, immediately he decided that, yes, I'm not only going to punish Indra and finish with his ego, but I'm also going to protect the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Now, Anena Sarva Durgani, that's what Gargamuni said. Anena Sarva Durgani, Jujan Anjas Tarishyadha. By his grace, by the grace of this child, you will easily cross beyond all difficulties. So the residents of Vrindavan, they were confident that Krishna will protect them. Then Krishna, with his left hand, he picked up Govardhan Hill. Now, let's pause for a moment and just imagine. It says in this chapter that Indra was astonished. There are two things that Indra mentions. One thing that he mentions, that the prosperity of the inhabitants of Vrindavan had made them proud. And because they were proud, they rejected him and they were accepting Krishna's instructions. Well, Indra is an inhabitant of the celestial planets. So for him to mention the prosperity of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, that means something, that they were very prosperous, actually. It describes how they used to carry plenty of gold and plenty of silk, and everybody lived well. Everybody had sumptuous food and habitat, and everything was auspicious. And also it mentions that Indra was astonished by seeing Krishna doing that. Now, if Indra was astonished, imagine how the inhabitants of Vrindavan were when they saw that. I remember one time in our farm in Brazil, we had a pasture and cows, and the farm was at the foot of a very high mountain. And some folks were flying with, how do you call those things that you fly on them in English? Yes. So they jumped all the way from the mountain. And they landed right on the field where the cows were. And there were maybe 20 cows. And as they were landing, all the cows are like this, paralyzed. All of them looking. Now they became paralyzed. They could not know. So what is this? It's like four or five of them landing at the same time. So imagine how the cows, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the deers, and everybody, when suddenly Krishna picks up Govardhan Hill with his left hand and raises it, imagine their face. If Indra was astonished, imagine the inhabitants of Vrindavan. They were completely astonished. And Krishna said, come on, everybody. You can come under my shelter. No. Do not hesitate. It's not going to fall, Krishna said. Krishna gave them assurance that, don't worry, it's not going to fall. Because the first thought would be, this thing is going to fall. It's not going to last. He said, no, it's not going to fall. You can all come in and be protected. So all of them came with their wagons, their animals, their wives, their children. Some of their belongings, they all came under Krishna's shelter, and it's explained there was plenty of room for everybody to be comfortable. And it's explained also by the acharyas that even the animals that were on top of the hill, because as Krishna lifted, obviously some stayed on top of the hill, even them did not feel any pain or any anxiety. Even them were protected, both under the hill and on top of the hill. And Krishna stayed for 7 days holding the hill. And it's explained also that the brahmanas and the elders and everybody else, they were so astonished just seeing that, that they would not even ask how that's possible. They were just, in ecstasy watching the whole scene happening. Like something spectacular is happening. And then, Indra, upon seeing that and being astonished, he decided that, no, there's definitely something wrong with my plan. No, I'm going to plan B. And plan B was that he called all the clouds back, said, you come back, all of you. And the rain ceased. And everything dried up. When everything was dried, and the sun rose again, Krishna told his friends and relatives and animals, now you can go safely. The waters have subsided. The rivers are normal. Everything is dry. There's no more problem. You can take your wagons and families and animals and you can leave. And it says that they slowly left, all of them. And when nobody else was under the mountain, well, that was an important point. No? Because if Krishna puts it down and somebody's there, it would be a disaster. So Krishna had to know that everybody is gone. And then gently, he placed Govardhan Hill back exactly in the same place as it was before. And then at that moment, there was a big woo. And everybody came to Krishna. Now to massage his arm, to kiss his head. You know, as we sing every day, that Mother Yashoda would kiss Krishna's cheeks, that they would get red like bimba fruit. Everybody was kissing and massaging Krishna's arms and taking care of him. And the elders were offering blessings to Krishna. His friends that were the same age, they were joking with him. You know, I could do this too. You know, they're all joking. You know, and you know, the younger people, because some are younger than Krishna. Krishna was 7. But in this culture, even the younger ones, they were offering obeisances to Krishna because they were younger. You see how this culture is so important, you know, so respectful to elders. Krishna was only 7. They were 5 or 4. They were offering obeisances to Krishna. And then the demigods just started playing the drums and singing and showering flowers. It's very interesting because this is started as a local event in a remote village in India and ended as a cosmic happening. So it's a very interesting situation, no? Because was there just a ceremony there, and suddenly the demigods are involved and they're showering flowers and the Gandharvas were singing and the whole universe is in commotion at this point. And that ends the chapter 25th, which is 2 of 4. Then it starts chapter 26, that the Brahmanas while Krishna was lifting Govardhan Hill, they were just in ecstasy seeing everything. But when they went back home, then reality settled in their hearts and they started questioning, what did really happen? Now, how could it be that Krishna is only 7 years old and he lifted Govardhan Hill? And Krishna, when he was just a baby, he killed Putana, who was a great demon. And then he also killed Trinavarta, Bakasura, Vatsasura. No. And he also fought with Kaliya. So they were remembering all this and they were saying, how is this possible that this child can do this? Then they decided, they made up their mind and they said, let's go to the king of Raja, Nanda Maharaj, and let's find out from him how this is possible. So they got into their wagons and all went to see Nanda Maharaj. When they got to Nanda Maharaj, they said, Nanda Maharaj, we saw what happened and we still cannot believe. So we would like to know from you, that you explain to us what is really happening. Who is your son? So Nanda Maharaj then told them that when Garga Muni, Garga Rishi, he did Krishna's horoscope, he said that this child comes every millennium and that he knew all the incarnations of this child, but we did not know. And that previously he had come in an incarnation that was white, one that was red, and one that was gold or yellow. And that he would always protect all his family members and the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So when I read this, it came to mind one nice pastime that Prabhupada once was in Vrindavan, and suddenly he woke up and he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I had a dream. When Prabhupada said he had a dream, then all the servants and all the devotees that were there all came together around Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, there was many drunkards, and there was also a group of chanters, and some of the drunkards, they were becoming chanters, and they were very crazy and causing a lot of disturbance. And then Tamal Krishna asked, were some of the chanters becoming drunkards? And because Tamal Krishna was very interactive, that's why Prabhupada liked him. He was very interactive. You know? He said he didn't like Shuddha Kirti because Shuddha Kirti would all agree with everything. You know? But Tamal Krishna was very interactive. So some of the chanters becoming drunkards, Prabhupada said, no. Chanters never fall down. They are on the list back home, back to Godhead. They are part of Krishna's family. So when I read this, I said, wow. I may be all the way down on the list, but I'm part of Krishna's family too. You know, all of us are part of Krishna's family. So we have some hope here. I was also tracking back on this chapter. You see, Krishna has a tremendous power of persuasion, because he made the elders and his father change a tradition at the cost of having Vrindavan flooded. He has so much power of persuasion, so he can persuade us as well to surrender to him. He can persuade us to give up sense gratification, material desires, and just surrender to him. He has that power of persuasion. And that can be done. So there is hope. And then I thought of another pastime also, when Aniruddha, who is the son of Prajuna, and Prajuna is the son of Krishna and Rukmini, and he met with Usha, who was the daughter of Banasura. And she had a servant who was Chitraleka. Chitraleka means that she can draw things nicely. She's an expert drawer. No? It's a long pastime. I'm not going to describe everything. But Chitraleka took Aniruddha through the airwaves all the way to the palace inside the quarters of Usha. And he was residing there without anybody's knowledge. And one day, the guards thought something is strange here. She's not behaving properly. So they went to Banasura, the king, and said, something is happening there in your daughter's quarters. No, she's not behaving properly. So he went there and just stormed him. And at that moment, Aniruddha was playing chess with Usha. And Aniruddha just kept playing chess, so cool-headed, did not even pay attention to Banasura. He is in his, you know, in her father's palace, in his daughter's quarters, secretly. And Banasura storms in, and he keeps playing chess like nothing happened. So Banasura became really angry and told the guards, no, capture him. The guards tried to capture him, but he was too powerful. He's the grandson of Krishna. They could not capture him. Then finally, it's a long pastime, finally Banasura captured him. But when Krishna heard, he went there with his army, destroyed the whole kingdom of Banasura, even fought Lord Shiva and won. Just to get Aniruddha back was his family member. See what Krishna can do for his family member. So we are part of Krishna's family, so there's a lot of hope for us. So then, Nanda Maharaj explained all this according to what Gargarishi had described during the event of Krishna's birth ceremony, and they were satisfied and they went back home. But then now, we go to the last chapter, because I think my time is running out as well. The last chapter is chapter 27, when Indra goes to Lord Brahma. You know, he had messed up, you know, with Krishna. Now he is, let me turn my phone off, should have turned off before. Setting the example, no?
Yeah, we need a new rule. No cell phone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a rule. It should be a rule. I agree. Starting with myself. So, and Lord Brahma told Surabhi that you go see Krishna, and Indra, you follow him. So, in this case, the woman was leading, the man was following her. And after Krishna put down Govardhan Hill in the right place, and all the inhabitants came to talk to him and say thank you and massage his arm and so forth and so on, he went back to take care of the cows with his friends. He was just taking care of the cows. And when he knew that Indra was coming, he went to a secluded place. And the acharyas describe the reason why he went to a secluded place. It's because he knew that Indra was coming to ask for forgiveness. And he did not want to further embarrass Indra. So this is very good for all of us. We should never act in a way that we are going to embarrass somebody. We should be always mindful of that. So Krishna is mindful of that. He did not want to embarrass Indra. Although Indra, just see the situation. The inhabitants of Vrindavan are very dear. And Indra made a mess out of Vrindavan, caused so much anxiety to everybody. And you see, Krishna is being so generous to him and does not want to embarrass him. So then Indra came with Surabhi. And they offered obeisances to Krishna. And Indra offered obeisance with his helm, and it's described that it was brilliant as the sun, directly at the feet of Krishna. And then for 10 verses, Indra glorifies Krishna. And remember before, Indra had referred to Krishna as Krishna Martyan, just a boy of this earth, a human being, an earthly being. It looks like at least Indra, I'm not sure if other demigods, don't look at us in this earth with very high. they see those people down there. Sometimes like wealthy people look, oh, third world country. So this looks like a third world planet. Looks like the way they see it. But the same, although here we're so proud and we have our beautiful house, but probably our house and our car cannot even be used as trash can in the heavenly cleansing. would not be acceptable. So remember then, Krishna was referred to by Indra as Krishna Martyam, a boy of this world. But now, he referred to Krishna as Krishna Bhagavan. He says, finding the exact word in here. Exact verse. Namastubhyam Bhagavate. I offer my obeisances at the very beginning. He offers obeisances. He says, Namastubhyam Bhagavate. I offer my obeisances to you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now his mind changed. He is purified. That was Krishna's intention, to purify his heart. Why? Because Krishna explains in one of the previous verses that the demigods are supposed to be in the mode of goodness. That's what they're supposed to be. But obviously, Indra reacting like this, sending the clouds and let me destroy this whole thing, that wasn't the mode of goodness. No, that was some other mode, but definitely not the mode of goodness. So he was ready to destroy everybody. But now, he came back to his senses. And now, Namastubhyam Bhagavate, that now Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. For 10 verses, he glorifies Krishna. And then, for 3 very short verses, like one-line verses, Krishna says, it's okay, it's okay. Now, go back to your planet, continue performing your functions, but do not be proud of your position. And actually, in the Sanskrit verse, it's in plural. The acharyas describe that because Krishna was instructing not only Indra, but all the demigods. And it's very important, this instruction is very important for anybody that leads. We can lead, but we should never be proud that I am the doer, I'm doing everything, I am so important, I'm such a great leader. I'm such, even if you're leading just your family, I'm such a great father, I'm such a great mother, I'm such a great son, I'm such a great teacher. No, we should never be arrogant. And it's interesting how Krishna, in very three short lines, he instructed Indra and Indra left. No, it wasn't that kind of forgiveness that Krishna said, oh, you are forgiven, let's go home and have lunch together. No, it wasn't like that. Oh, let's go and play a little bit with the coward boys. No, it was not that kind of intimate forgiveness. It was a forgiveness, yeah, okay, a very sober forgiveness. No, you're forgiven, but now you'll go back to your country, your planet, and continue with your service, and do not be arrogant. Not be arrogant. Actually, inside every conditioned soul, there's a little Indra. Inside of all of us. Because we have this desire to be the Lord. So we all have this little Indra inside that sometimes manifests and wants to flood Vrindavan, you know. And but then by the association of devotees, we can bring that under control. And now we understand, no, that's not my goal, that's not my life. So this festival, such a special festival. At that point, again, the demigods are all showering flowers and drums. And then, everything around became auspicious. That's the end of the 27th chapter. Everything, I would like to read it for you because it's such a beautiful description. And the purport, it's a very nice purport also. It says, rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids. Trees exuded honey. Edible plants came to maturity without cultivation. And hills gave forth jewels formerly hidden in their interiors. So everything became auspicious. O Parikshit, beloved of the Kuru dynasty, upon the ceremonial bathing of Lord Krishna, because I forgot to mention that Surabhi with her milk and Airavata bringing water, the elephant bringing water from the Ganges, and other cows from Vrindavan that joined Surabhi, they all performed the bathing ceremony of Lord Krishna. They all circumambulated the Lord. Yeah. All living creatures, even those cruel by nature, became entirely free of empty. And the purport is really a nice purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Those corrupted by a type of sophisticated cynicism may mock these descriptions of a paradisiacal world situated, paradisiacal world situation affected simply by worshipping the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, modern man has created a hell on earth, and his cynical rejection of heaven on earth, which is actually possible through Krishna consciousness. The situation described here, created simply by the auspicious bathing ceremony of the Lord, is an authentical historical incident. Since history repeats itself, there is hope that the Krishna consciousness movement may again bring the world community to the brilliant reality of self-realized existence. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I think this ending was actually matched perfectly, the bathing ceremony that's coming up.